Ironically, Raytheon was invited to Derry in the north of Ireland as part of the peace process, as part of investment. And the Nobel Peace Prize winners, Hume and Trimble, opened the Raytheon plant in Derry. I believe it was their first public act once they won the Nobel Peace Prize. So with that kind of irony, this weapons company came to the north of Ireland, which had previously seen 30 years of war. So local people objected to the presence of Raytheon. They saw it as contrary to the ethos of the Good Friday Agreement in relation to decommissioning weapons, and they also knew of its work in killing people in the Third World, and especially in the wars in Iraq, etc. So there's been a grassroots campaign since Raytheon entered Derry. A group called FEC, which is the Foyle Ethical Investment Community, Foyle is the river that goes through Derry, have confronted Raytheon and also the city council in Derry about the presence of this plant. They make software for weapon systems that Raytheon produce. So, you know, things like the cruise missile can be fired from a range of 1,000 kilometres, and it can navigate close to the terrain of the Earth to avoid radar detection. So it was very much on the techie side of things, on the software side of things. They promised to bring 100 jobs to Derry. They only have 35 people working there, and I suspect those people come from outside the area to work there mostly. So during the bombing of Lebanon in 2006, there was an Iraq war veteran, Joshua Castile, who'd been an interrogator at Abu Ghraib, and he was doing a speaking tour of Ireland during our third trial, the Pitstop Tasha's third trial, in the August of 06. So he went to Derry, and 100 people turned up at Sandino's, which is a bit of a lefty bar in Derry, where he was giving a talk. And the bombing of Lebanon was well underway. So when it came to question and answer time, discussion quickly turned to the bombing of Lebanon. And it was pointed out that Raytheon munitions and equipment and weapons were being used extensively in the Israeli bombing of Lebanon. Also, around that time, the Pitstop Plowshares were acquitted of $2.5 million at Shannon Airport of damage to a U.S. warplane. Shannon Airport has become a major U.S. military hub. It's on the west coast of Ireland. And the Americans were attempting to resupply the Israelis with bunker busters, Raytheon-produced bunker busters, through Shannon. But because of the acquittal and the outcry, the Irish government wouldn't let those planes land at Shannon, and they went on to Prestwick in Scotland before going to Israel. So bunker busters were coming through from the States, Raytheon bunker busters, to resupply for the bombing of Lebanon. So people at the meeting began to discuss what could they do, especially with the presence of Raytheon in Derry, and also how significant it was in the ongoing bombing of Lebanon. And there was a suggestion at that public meeting that people should go in and disable Raytheon computers in a hope to slow down their contribution, Raytheon's contribution to the killing in Lebanon. There was some debate about that, whether property destruction is nonviolent or not. So they decided to call a second meeting, which 50 people turned up to a few days later at a different bar. It was actually held in a public bar. The room was double booked that they hoped to have, which was about how to go into Raytheon and disable it. So they chose the 9th of August, 2 days later, which of course is the anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki, the atomic bombing. And people met in a car park and walking distance of Raytheon. They proceeded down. They were surprised to find only three police waiting for them. A worker in the building that Raytheon offices shares opened the door to go to work, and people rushed across the road and entered the building. They then went upstairs to Raytheon offices and accessed the office by breaking a door and clearing the staff out. There was a commitment to disabling Raytheon equipment, but also a commitment to non-violence for the action. The group of people weren't pacifist, but they had committed to non-violence for this action. So
Was there an agreement as to who was going to be doing the damaging and who was going to do just the protesting?
I think it was a bit self-selecting who ended up inside. There was a general agreement on non-violence. People were reminded of that before they left the car park to walk down to Raytheon. But it was a fairly open action. Some of the people who managed to barricade themselves into the office then had to introduce themselves to each other. They hadn't met, although they were all from Derry. And they barricaded themselves in, and so it was nine men in the office. The siege or the occupation went on for a good 5 or 6 hours. There was a very over-the-top response. I believe snipers and hostage negotiators were flown in from Belfast, and the nine people inside the office went about the work of non-violently disabling the mainframe computer, and also throwing several laptop computers out the window and documents, etc.
Explain this disabling. What does this mean exactly?
To disable?
Yes.
To render something motionless, I guess, to make sure it can't keep doing the work it's doing. And in this case, this mainframe computer was the link between Derry and Raytheon International, and also the link to Lebanon. It was a very, as they found out during the trial, it was a lot more significant than they thought it was. It was a very significant piece of equipment for the Raytheon Corporation. It wasn't merely a protest. It wasn't merely an occupation of an office. It was an attempt to disable equipment in the hope that by doing that, this would preserve life and property and social infrastructure in Lebanon. So it was an act of non-violent resistance rather than a protest. And
if you could back up for a moment, Derry, County Derry, which is in Northern Ireland, which isn't the Republic of Ireland, but is still British occupied or British anyways. But tell me what is Derry, County Derry, and what is the history of that? How would you explain the story there?
Okay, I guess Ireland was partitioned in the 1920s, and it was petitioned in a way that would gerrymander the electorate for a Protestant or Unionist majority. And so the most northern part of Ireland, Donegal, is not in Northern Ireland. Londonderry, as the British would call it, and would people who believe in the Union would call it, or Derry, which I believe it's his original name, and it's what Republicans or people who don't acknowledge petition would call it, would be a majority Catholic, I would think. I would think about 75% Catholic. It's only 4 miles from the border of Donegal into the Irish Republic, or the 26 counties. Not even the whole province of Ulster, two of the counties of Ulster were left out of this petitioning arrangement, and are not part of Northern Ireland, so it wasn't even all of the Ulster province that was taken or kept by the British. Derry became world famous, I guess. It was a stronghold of the non-violent civil rights movement in the 1960s, a movement that was inspired by Martin Luther King's movement in the south of the United States, and very much led by Eamon McCann and others. He was a significant organizer in that movement. And on 1 March in 1972, which was against internment, a policy of a detention without charge, which was introduced by the British. British paras were flown into Derry, and they opened fire on a non-violent march, killing 14 unarmed civilians. And this was a very significant event in the history of the north of Ireland. It escalated the war. Massive recruitment to the IRA followed the events of Derry. There was a major cover-up by the British judiciary of this, and there's actually a new inquiry into what's known as Bloody Sunday in Derry. So it's a town that's seen a lot of military occupation over the last 30 years. A lot of people, activists, were interned and went to prison for many years. One of the Raytheon Nine had served 14 years in prison, was released under the Good Friday Agreement. There's a real history of struggle, non-violent and armed struggle in Derry. There's a consciousness of third world issues, that people like the Palestinians and the East Timorese and others were in a similar situation to people of Derry.
So now it's so-called peaceful, and they created this, in the name of peace, they created a military arms manufacturer right there in Derry.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they think they can have peace without justice, and I guess what the Irish are being invited into is into the center of the empire, that Ireland has been at the fringe of empire. The south was at the fringe and as recently as the 1920s, and of course the north was at the fringe in the 1990s. So the Irish are being promised that we can be fast-tracked into the center and make munitions and facilitate troop movements that won't kill us, but will kill people in Iraq and Afghanistan and Lebanon and elsewhere. So the Raytheon Nine are very much people, they're mostly socialists and Republicans, who've said a very clear no to this bribe, that you know, their identity with being Irish and socialists and Republicans is that you don't tolerate companies in your community that are killing people in the third world. And these people, the Raytheon Nine, were initially charged with terrorist offences and were going to be denied a jury trial under the Diplock system. But once they received bail, all nine of them went to Lebanon. They went to Kana and met victims of Raytheon's weapons. You know, parents had lost kids and kids had lost parents, and started a charity for the work of you know, of healing of what Raytheon has done there. So yeah, they're quite an interesting bunch of people, good kind of pretty working class guys basically.
There was a time for where the Brits could intern you for what happened with that, where they could just take you off the street?
Well, it hasn't gone away.
It hasn't. No. Okay.
I just introduced 42-day detention this week. So as I was leaving, I'm living at a church here in Dublin. I yelled out, I was going up to Belfast. So I said, I'll see you soon. Hopefully not in 42 days, to the priest. So yeah, they still have a system of detention without charge. It's mainly focused at the Muslim community rather than the Irish Catholic community as it was in the 70s. They had internment in the 70s, which was a lot longer than 42 days. People did years in jail. People like Jerry Adams did a couple of years in jail.
With no court, or was there a court? How did that work?
No, it wasn't. It was detention without charge. And then eventually they had the Diplock courts with no juries. And in the South still, you can, if you're suspected of paramilitary involvement, you can do 5 years in jail for suspicion of being a member of an illegal organization, usually one modeled on the Irish Republican Army. So, and you can do 5 years in jail in the South on the basis of the testimony of merely the testimony or assessment of a police inspector.
So there's a real sense that they're just using the old laws and bringing them out of the closet and applying them to a new group of people today.
Yeah. I was in Gareth Pearce's office 2 years ago now, but and I was waiting to speak to her personal assistant, and she's the woman who helped free the Guildford 4 and the Birmingham 6 and the Maguire 7. And as I was waiting, I just heard all these phone calls coming into the secretary from people with names like Muhammad and stuff. And I thought, you know, 15 years ago, that would have been Paddy and Seamus on the other end of the phone. So, it's terrible, really. I mean, the government are using the hype and the fear of terrorism to crack down on any dissent. I've been detained at Luton Airport by the anti-terrorist squad and by the Irish Special Branch here and recently. So, and I'm a pacifist. I'm part of the Catholic Worker. We've been pacifists for 7 years. Whenever we do actions, we always stay and pray. We're not very covert. I've got dreadlocks going down to my butt, so I'm not very up for covert activity. So they're obviously using the hysteria and the laws, responding to that, to crack down on dissent, on non-violent anti-war dissent. And I'm sure that's what we'll see in Belfast in the next 24 hours. That's what we're seeing in London today, is they've banned people protesting Bush's visit from Parliament Square. So people are heading in there and will probably be arrested for just expressing their dissent.
So they won in court, yes?
Yeah, it was a very interesting trial. I was up there for 3 days. In the prosecution's case, on cross-examination, One of the Raytheon guys, who's Irish, is now working in the States. Gave great testimony for the defense about the nature of Raytheon, about their disinterest in the victims of their weapon systems and what they produce, and how the Derry office was connected to Raytheon International and the bombing of Lebanon. So a lot of evidence, as you know, you hope to do when you're a defendant, you get out on cross-examination. The evidence you can get out from a hostile witness often obviously counts more than the testimony you're giving.
But I don't understand. They threw these equipment out of the window. They disabled this stuff. Yeah. Why weren't they found guilty of that?
Okay, I'm just leading you through the trial here. So at the end of the prosecution case, which went for about a week, the charge of affray, which is like rioting, was dropped. The judge said there would be no evidence given by the police of anyone feeling threatened during the action, etc. So they were charged with six offences. So affray was dropped immediately. Then they had the burglary and criminal damage and one theft charge. So the defence opened up, and Eamon McCann took the stand. So he gave evidence. The prosecution were attempting to push the line that this was a spontaneous protest that got out of hand and led to acts of wanton destruction. And McCann quite humorously responded, no, that wasn't the case. And if wanton destruction was what they were about, they wouldn't have bothered opening the window before they threw the computer out. So, you know, they didn't unnecessarily smash the window, which I thought was very good. What they were about was disabling equipment that was servicing weapon systems that were killing kids in Lebanon. And he gave very good evidence. He was very relaxed on the stand, refused to be provoked by the prosecutor. The defense team was very talented. And then what I recall, because they wouldn't let me take notes in the public gallery, is on the Tuesday morning, the prosecutor got up and kind of made a statement to the effect that the prosecution accepted they had a reasonable belief that Raytheon was involved in killing in Lebanon. I think he kind of forgot that his own witness had built the plank between Raytheon Derry and Raytheon International in Lebanon. Then the defense barrister, well, there were many of them, there were about 15 guys in wigs there, hadn't seen so many wigs since a New Romantics gig in the early 80s. The defense barrister got up and he said, I'm quite surprised to be at this court, this part of proceedings, to ask Your Honor to direct the jury to acquit on the basis of the evidence given before the court. And he was very articulate, and the judge was very impressed with his arguments. And the prosecutor responded. The judge wasn't too impressed with his response. Prosecutor were pushing this line of a spontaneous thing that got out of hand, people losing their head and wanted destruction. And the judge said, well, if I go in that direction, it's going to be appealed by the prosecution, so I'm going to adjourn for 24 hours and write up my decision. He came in on the Wednesday. This couldn't be reported because it was in the absence of the jury. So even to put it up on indie media, etc., would be sub judice and threaten the trial happening, continuing, which the defense didn't want to happen either. So on the Wednesday morning, the judge came in and gave, I think, what the defense barristers thought was a watertight rationale for why he wanted to direct the jury to acquit these people, not even put the decision before the jury. And then the prosecution called for a 20-minute adjournment, and then they came back and called for a 24-hour adjournment. So before they appealed. So I thought at that point, look, if they're having second thoughts about appealing here, they're going to go and see their masters back in London. They mustn't be very confident of winning an appeal. But they appealed mid-trial, which quite surprised me that you can do that, but you can do that. So by Friday, the defense had lost, the prosecution had won that appeal. So the judge could not direct the jury to find them not guilty. So closing arguments happened last Monday, and the jury were out for about 45 minutes, came back, said they hadn't reached a decision, so they put them in a hotel overnight on the Monday night and came back and returned a unanimous acquittal. And on the burglary and the criminal damage charges, Eamon McCann had, when he got into the office, he tried to access computer disks and check them out, but he couldn't understand the technology or something. So he absentmindedly put a couple of discs in his coat pocket and then hung his coat up for the next 5 or 6 hours of occupation. And when the police chainsawed through the barricade and came up with them, I think, believe with plastic bullet guns, inching forward like the last scene in the Blues Brothers. I don't know if you remember that scene. And these guys are just sitting around the table playing cards, the nine. McCann gets up, puts his coat on and walks out, forgets he has the disc in his pocket. So he was charged with theft of the disc, you know. but he was found guilty of that, but no conviction recorded or dismissed or something like that. So they were fully acquitted, which is a very strong message to Raytheon, to the Israeli military and the British and American, but very much covered up by the mainstream media. This was a very historical acquittal, and so it's amazing how they literally cover the war, cover up the war and cover up the anti-war resistance. So,
if I could jump in here, the name of this radio show is Everybody's Rights. So tell me, why does someone have the right to do what the Raytheon 9 did?
Well, the most important thing is people's, right to life and existence. And this, of course, was being denied them by Raytheon bunker buster bombs in Lebanon. And, there's also a saying that if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. So when one goes into actions like this, I spent a year in jail for disarming a B-52 bomber in New York in 91. One goes in believing what they're doing is morally correct, and in the spirit of nonviolence, you are making yourself vulnerable rather than making anyone else vulnerable. So even if you're wrong, you can't do too much harm, But in this case, these people were obviously right, and they did not attempt to flee the scene. They did not attempt to burn the building down and risk a cleaner being in there or anything like that. They did it a very nonviolent way. And a responsible way. They stayed on site and played cards rather than pray, as Catholic workers would do. And they were arrested and taken through the legal process for 2 years and turned up to court and were acquitted. So,
what precedence in Northern Irish law is this?
Well, I would say too about the development of law is that there's, I think in the United States there's a general recognition that good law breaking led to good law making. That if it wasn't for people stealing property like the slaves and getting them to Canada, if it wasn't for the Boston Tea Party, if it wasn't for people playing the draft cards, or there's actually a recognition in, I think, American society, especially Obama in a recent speech said progress through civil war and civil disobedience. There's probably the next president of the United States acknowledging the role of civil disobedience in the development of American society and law. So this isn't such a strong recognition in the British system, which is basically the Irish and Australian legal system. But, I think good law making has led to good law breaking, and civil disobedience is a very healthy dynamic in any culture, in any democracy.
In your communities in Derry and other places in Northern Ireland, what's the conversation now for this type of tactic or strategy? There was a very nasty war in the recent past, and now there's this nonviolent disabling. Is this a strategy? Is this only work or what?
I think it's a shame that different groups, three of these people, members of the Socialist Workers Party, who, my experience, often run the broader anti-war movement and argue against nonviolent direct action. So it was very much a surprise that their party produced people willing to do this. A number of the guys were Republicans, who disagree with the Good Friday Agreement. And I thought this action could have been a seminal moment, both for socialists like the SWP and for Republicans who don't believe in petitions. So it's sad that those broader traditions didn't see it as significant as it was, and begin a dialogue around what this action means. I think it'd be wonderful if Republicanism morphed into a movement of nonviolent direct action rather than drift off into parliamentarianism. And you've got the scene in Belfast tomorrow of Republican politicians and welcoming George Bush as a man of peace, hoping he'll put investment to north of Ireland without any question whether that investment should be weapons-related or not, or whether they get stuck in the dead end of armed struggle, which does continue a little bit here. But, it's a great tragedy because you know, the creation myth of Ireland is armed struggle, is redemptive violence, is the GPO in 1916. And every party claims that. The mainstream parties like Fianna Fáil, which is the party of De Valera, who's in government down the south, the party of Fine Gael, which is the party of Michael Collins, who pretty much invented urban guerrilla warfare, whether it's the party of Sinn Féin and Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness, whether it's the dissident IRA, small groups that continue, they all claim the same creation myth of the GPO and of redemptive violence. And I think it's, you know, I'm a pacifist, I'm a radical Christian, and I think that dialogue around, you know, there was much more to the GPO than violence. It was, you know, a quest for liberty and autonomy and anti-imperialism. And those are themes that should be more significant to us than some kind of macho sentimentality about military resistance. And I think the Raytheon 9 action, if it had been taken seriously by socialists and Republicans and the church and everyone else, could offer a new form for resistance in Ireland to whether it's British or US imperialism.
And so what's the response to Bush visiting Northern Ireland?
Well, I've just written out an article in case I'm otherwise detained for the next 42 days called The Emperor Has No Clothes, Off to Belfast to Confront a Butt-Naked Bush. So he's there trying to get his legacy together. He's on this last world tour. He's probably trying to claim Northern Ireland as a great success story. And, he's in London today actually leaning on Brown. He's there praising Blair, but being very confrontational with the present Prime Minister, saying he shouldn't have setting an out date for British soldiers from Iraq. So he's still got an agenda to push, I guess. It's sad for me, you know, that the guys who led us to this war, whether it's John Howard from Australia or Blair from England or Bush from America or that Spanish dude, his name I can't remember.
Yeah.
You know, they're all off stage now, but the young men and women are still on the battlefield, people are still dying, and they will continue to die even while these guys are on the lecture circuit or at Club Med or their ranch or wherever they plan to be, you know. So it's very, very sad. You know?
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Kieran O'Reilly. It was great talking with you. I hope we can check in with you again, and you'll tell us more stories.
No worries. See ya.
See ya.
Love to have you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.